May it please the Court. Again, my name is Stuart Falinski. I represent Jiang Fang, who is present in court, and along with her mother and her mother's husband. The arguments in this case are essentially the same as made in the prior case of Strokis. However, I believe what I will have to do is go into the nature of the K visa, which has been called a hybrid. It's not an immigrant visa, and since it's not an immigrant visa, it has to be a non-immigrant by definition. And as I point out in the brief, you know, a non-immigrant can be coming here permanently. And the process, though, even though it's a non-immigrant visa, the State Department processes it as if it's an immigrant visa. You go through all the vetting, the background checks, the medical exam, the affidavit of support. And then, again, the person goes through an inspection at the airport, which happened here. Now, what are the conditions of the K-1 and the K-2 when they land? They're almost a lawful permanent resident. There is one little act that remains. The marriage has to take place within 90 days. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's what happened here. And, I go by the argument of it's not under 245A, but this court has the advantage here of not only Judge O'Neill's decision, but Judge Wilkins' decision in the Verovkin case. And I would submit, if 245A applies, then it is Judge Wilkins' decision that should apply. And although, you know, there was no attorney there, I do know for a fact in Verovkin, because I asked, they were aware of the fact that the Jiang case was being litigated and the Eastern District is an electronic filing court. And I asked if they had relied on the briefs in Jiang, and they told me they had. So, in a way, it may sound strange, I had two cases, one in favor, one against, and I would respectfully submit that if 245A applies, then it's Judge Wilkins.
What? To what?
245 paren A, if that's where the adjustment is, rather than adjustment by operational law upon marriage. It is Judge Wilkins' analysis that would apply. And also, as I mentioned in the prior case, this issue is being litigated in immigration courts throughout the country. I am aware of two judges, one of which was not in the Ninth Circuit, who have adopted the rationale in Verovkin, and recently I'm aware of another immigration judge who did not discuss Verovkin but used Choin as the analysis to support and grant adjustment to an aged-out K-2. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time if there are no further questions.
There is a question.
Of course.
I have to say, I've got a problem with an argument based on 245 at this point, when the case certainly put to us through the opening brief, and I presume put to the district court, is premised on not being under 245.
Correct.
How can we take up an issue and basically adopt a position which is directly contrary to the position that was taken below and at first in this court? How can we say the district courts had a fair opportunity to deal with that question if it wasn't raised that way?
It was phrased that way, and then the one issue that was actually brought up by Judge O'Neill, which I did not spot, was the last sentence of the amended 214D as it stood right after the enactment of INFA. Contrary to Judge O'Neill, the language about deportation was not added. It was there. The prior language was that if you don't get married within 90 days, you shall leave, and if you don't leave, you will be deported.
Your opening brief appears to state unequivocally that this is not a 245 case, in your view.
Correct.
She was unable to file under that section, and you made no argument that 245 applies and could be interpreted in a way that's favorable to your client. And ordinarily, if an issue is not clearly argued in an opening brief, we don't reach it, period. Why should we do so in this case?
Okay, first of all, when the opening brief was written, I did not have the advantage of the Verofkin decision. Certainly didn't have advantage of Choyne. And this court in Choyne
said 245 existed, and you could have made the argument that was made in Choyne. I mean, people make arguments that are not yet supported by a Ninth Circuit decision.
Well, also, as I noted in the supplemental brief in the other case, and I did cite Vimpathia, that in an issue of statutory interpretation, when it's clear language, it can be brought up at any time. The Supreme Court ruled on clear statutory language, which was never an issue. In fact, there was, again, an article of faith. The Flutie Doctrine applied to the old Section 244 suspension. It was argued that way by everybody. It went up on certiorari that way. It was briefed that way. It was argued that way. No one ever challenged the fact that Flutie was, quote, essentially irrelevant. The first time that appeared in that case was in Justice O'Connor's opinion. So it's a pure question of law. And as this court pointed out in Choyne, 245 was ambiguous. And when I read it, I tend to be very pedantic, which I think is very obvious from the brief. 245A requires that the alien have an, quote, immigrant visa immediately available. And with the K-2 over 18, as pointed out by Judge Wilkin, there is no immigrant visa as defined by the Act available. And, you know, unless the marriage takes place before is 18, what we may end up with is, you know, Ms. Jiang went through the whole process while over the age of 18. She never had an immigrant visa immediately available, any which way. So everybody went through an idle act that she couldn't adjust. And I think that's an absurd interpretation, Your Honor.
I understand your position. You have a little bit of time left that you may wish to save for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Audrey Hemesath on behalf of the government. I'd like to address the two developments that have occurred since the briefing was done in this case, and that is the Verofkin decision and the Choyne decision. There's a key difference in both of those cases from the facts in this case, and that is that in this case, when Ms. Jiang submitted her application, she was not eligible for the relief sought. In Verofkin, the petitioner there was eligible. He was under age 21 at the time he applied. He aged out while his application was pending before the agency. That is a parallel circumstance to the facts in the Choyne decision. And my reading of that decision is that what motivated the court there was the concern that the application was languishing in the agency's files. Similar concern in Verofkin, although admittedly the judge in the Verofkin case did go on to make a square disagreement with the district court judge in our case, indicating that perhaps under similar facts she would have also ruled differently. But on the facts presented to this court, Ms. Jiang became ineligible when she turned 21 the day after she arrived in the United States. So when she submitted her application subsequently, she was not eligible, and the agency correctly denied the application on that basis.
So if you arrive a day before you're 21 and it's physically impossible, you can't apply, according to your view?
It would be very difficult. It would be very difficult. You would have to imagine a circumstance where the marriage took place that day, the application was filed that day, and adjudicated that same day.
I guess I don't understand the process of the K visas, because as I understand the process, it's not like you have to do it. It's not, quote, automatic, but you're there properly because the marriage is taking place or is about to take place. And, I believe that there's something in the statute and the regs that would provide protection here. Because Congress, and what they call the Child Status Preservation Act, did do something about aging out. Now you're telling me in a process in which someone is even, quote, more entitled to be here, there's no protection. Maybe so.
Thank you. I'm glad Your Honor mentioned the Child Protective Services Act, because I think it is a helpful parallel for the government, actually. The CSPA, applies to immigrant visas. So there is statutory protection available for aliens applying with immigrant visas. This is a non-immigrant visa. And K non-immigrant visa holders are treated actually quite well on the law, under the law, if they come closer to age 18 than they come closer to 21. At almost age 21, it's just a tough circumstance. But at closer to 18, they are allowed to adjust status once the marriage takes place without the need for a visa to be immediately available, without the waiting period that traditionally applies to non-immigrant visa aliens. So, for example, if someone had come in under a student visa, an F visa, and had a child that was in that same age bracket, 18 to 21, that child would have to wait, as is done traditionally under the State Department waiting visa availability periods, for a visa to become available. K2 non-immigrants do not have to do that. If they come within the closer to 18 time period, they are permitted to adjust immediately. And that's a privilege. But they are not accorded the privileges of the Child Service Protection Act. That is something that Congress reserved to immigrant visas, and I think we have to respect that distinction, that there is no statutory protection on aging out here.
But their adjustment is not based on their on a separate application. It's based on the original approved K-2 visa, right?
The government's position is that under Section 245, a separate application to adjust status must be made, that was the effect of the IMFA.
And what does that mean, adjust? What happens? The inquiry when you do that? It's a very different one, isn't it, than it is for immigrants? I mean, let's just quote, we'll call it a new immigrant. What do you do with it? You basically have no basis to deny it unless there was no marriage. What basis would you have to deny it? Let's assume for somebody who's clearly within the age group. What basis would you have to deny that visa, the approval?
It's still an application just as any other Section 245 application. So a criminal conviction during the relevant time period, child support, any of the other grounds of statutory ineligibility would still trump what the court is suggesting would be an automatic eligibility.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
One thing that's odd here, since I guess it was the Real ID Act, we don't get cases from district court very much. And so I understand why this came the route that it did, but it's still unusual for us not to have what I'll just say is an adjudicated interpretation by the agency. Are we still free to proceed, or is there some other alternative that we should turn to? What should we look to find out what the agency's interpretation would be in an adjudicated context?
It's an interesting question because, first of all, under the Real ID Act, this is a legal question. It's a question of statutory eligibility for adjustment of status, unlike the discretionary decisions, which we argue don't belong in district court. That's how we got here under the declaratory judgment posture. There's an argument out there to be made that Ms. Jiang should have exhausted remedies by awaiting placement in removal proceedings, making this argument to the immigration judge, making this argument to the board, and then appearing here under petition for review context. I didn't make that exhaustion argument because she hasn't been placed in removal proceedings, and that's really beyond her control when she is, and so we made the decision not to pursue that exhaustion argument. But that is out there, and it's possible that, assuming this doesn't go her way, that she still can be placed in removal proceedings, and I suppose she can raise this argument again.
You'll argue collateral estoppel? Raise.
Well, it would depend entirely on this court's ruling.
But I'm interested, you believe this is a pure question of law, right?
I do.
So even though they didn't raise it in the original brief, I guess we have discretion.
Oh, on the 245?
Yeah.
I suppose that's right. I guess I disagree. I don't think that Grofkin altered the legal landscape, and so to that extent, the 245 argument could have been made. I'll leave that to the court whether to get into the 245 issue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Falinski, you have a little bit of rebuttal time remaining.
Yes. About the legal basis for staying here, my opening brief did cite in passing to Akhtar versus Brzezinski. And one of the plaintiffs in that case, and this had to do with a different status under the visas in Victor, he arrived the day before his 21st birthday, and at the airport was admitted for 2 years, just like they thought it would be. And this is in the decision, even though the INS inspector admitted Angeles until August 13, 2003, the government asserts that the inspector's actions were made in error and that Angeles should have only been admitted until August 14, 2001, the same day he arrived in the United States. Now, about physical impossibility, there was no way that you could fly from China, land, collect your luggage, clear immigration, clear customs, run down to City Hall, get the marriage license, get married, get your papers ready, get them filed, and have them adjudicated in one day. It just can't be done. And as an
ACTA. What's the point of that?
What?
What's the point? If everything had happened 2 days later, there'd be a different result and nobody'd be surprised.
She wouldn't have been here.
Well, that's the point.
Exactly. So she was given a visa, said, if you're not in the United States until the day before your 21st birthday, it's over. They played by the rules. The consular officer, that's what they felt. The INS inspector at the airport, that's what they felt. That all you have to do is get here. The operative date was you get here before. Now, Judge Wilkins said she also disagreed with Jiang. You know, I agree that there's a factual difference there.
Also, your time is well over, but would you like to quickly wrap up?
Okay. Just one point on Child Status Protection Act. Child Status Protection Act has nothing to do with Ks at all, therefore has nothing to do with K-2 age-outs. And before CISPA came out, I can personally attest that K-2s just didn't age out as a matter of practice. And I have noted there is a coincidence that the K-2 age-out idea didn't arise until CISPA, which on its face had nothing to do with Ks. And with that, I'm willing to submit, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued is submitted. Again, we appreciate the arguments of both counsel. They've been very helpful. And the I think we're done for our sitting. Thank you. Thank you.